This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
Good morning, DCR.
The number one pick and a Super Bowl champ with the man that can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
That's Lawrence Taylor!
I don't marry trash, DMT for short. Wonder if we best, won't you peep the score? Sports Center Reed, gonna be top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise and shine with 98.7. This is Drive Time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Dave, Chris, and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
Good Friday morning to one and all, 30th day of July, 2021. What is going on, everybody? It's DCR here on 98.7 ESPN. Dan Grasso, Chris Canty, hanging out with you for the next few hours. 800-919-ESPN, 800-919-3776. We got RJ Santillo, we got Ray Santiago. CC, long time no chat. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, it has been a minute since you and I had a chance to catch up and actually work together, man. Everything is good. And I know Yankees fans out there are really excited. Brian Cashman has the sign out, all lefty bats are welcome.
Too bad he didn't have that sign out during the offseason, though.
Exactly.
We might not even have that conversation today, right?
You took the words out of my mouth, Dan. I mean, everybody's talking about Brian Cashman being able to land Anthony Rizzo, being able to go out and get Joey Gallo, and now putting Luke Voit on the trading block and trying to flip him for some pitching. And the first thought I had to myself was, well, why didn't you trade Luke Voit during the offseason when his value was significantly higher when he was coming off of leading the majors in home runs? I don't understand that for the life of me. I know we'll get to that. I don't want to get ahead of you. But I'll just say this. There's a lot more optimism with the Yankees fans today than there was at the start of this week. So I'm excited about what they're going to do in the second half.
I'll say this about Luke Voit. It's a good thing that he got that BMW commercial and the BMW spot signed, sealed, and delivered before this year took place, right? So maybe he gets to keep the car at least, because I don't know if he's going to be getting too many endorsements next offseason, given the fact this year's been a wash, and now effectively he doesn't have a position anymore with this baseball team. You're absolutely right. You know what else, too? Like, normally, you know, last week of July, It's kind of quiet, right? Like, you know, we're making the turn into August and everybody's trying to squeeze in maybe a last-minute vacation in the summertime, you know, before everything gets going for real.
Mm-hmm.
But think about, like, all the stuff we got on our plate this morning between all the baseball stuff with the trades that were made yesterday, the trades that are still going to go down today before 4 p.m. Eastern time. So what do we got? 11 more hours until the trade deadline expires in baseball. We got the training camps open. We got an NBA draft last night. We got a blockbuster trade in the NBA. This is not normal for late July, but hell, I'm not going to sit here and complain. I'll take it. We'll have fun with it.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, we got a sports smorgasbord. I mean, my Lakers getting Russell Westbrook. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, you see, we've got the Olympics going on right now. That's hot and heavy. I mean, training camp, the Jets got Zach Wilson coming back. I mean, there's a ton going on in the landscape of sports and a lot of it affecting the tri-state area. So, I mean, it's an exciting time right now, man. It's an exciting time. Typically this time of year, everybody's like, man, I can't wait till the Hall of Fame game gets here. And, you know, I'm glad that football started up this week. But, I mean, there are other things that are going on, and we're going to do our best to try to get to it over the course of the next, you know, 3 hours.
You mentioned the Olympics. Are you into it? Like, have you been watching a lot? Can you get into the Olympics? Because it's not for everybody.
No, it's not for everybody. I will tell you this. I'm more of a fan of the track and field events. Although, you know, I have been monitoring what's been going on with Team USA, the gymnastics part of it, just because we're supposed to be, you know, one of the best in the world and
sure.
Everything that's been going on with Simone Biles. So I've been monitoring that. And then I've been watching Team USA basketball. So, I mean, those are the two things that have kind of captured my attention. But I can't wait for the track and field stuff to really get going.
Yeah. And I mean, for those of you that are into, you know, like the baseball, for example, I think, and it's, see, that's the problem. Like when it's happening half a world away, it's so hard to even line everything up with the time difference. Mm-hmm. You know, you put on the TV at any given time, you don't know what's live, what's tape delay. Like it's so hard to, you know, is this really happening? And then social media kind of ruins it all too, which is a big problem because, you know, things are happening over in, you know, Japan. And in the meantime, it's 6 o'clock in the morning where we are. And then you're reading about it, and then you might sit down to watch it a little bit later on thinking it's live, but it's not. But the baseball team is supposed to play their first game, I think, in about an hour. And mm-hmm. there's only six countries, believe it or not, involved in the baseball this year. But Team USA has a couple of notables, a lot of former big leaguers. Our pal Todd Frazier, you know, local guy, former Met, former Yankee, he's on Team USA. So if that floats your boat, I think that game is on in an hour. Good luck finding it. I can't point you in the direction there. I mean, you never know where any of these things are. You might want to watch them, but you can't find them.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. I don't know what NBC is doing in terms of letting folks know when those programs are on, but yeah.
Not doing a good job. That's what you're doing.
Exactly. I'm with you 1,000%. You got to flip channels. You got to go to your TV guide and try to find every single thing. But no, man, we got a lot going on. I mean, the NBA draft was last night. The Knicks were wheeling and dealing. Got to love what Leon Rose is doing, his approach, slow build. I mean, the Nets are making moves. They traded Landry Shamet. So, I mean, there's a ton going on right now.
Before we, you know, we'll get deeper into the draft a little bit later on, but like just on the surface as a whole, how you felt maybe going into last night and then from what you saw, did this draft and all the so-called draft experts and the people that follow this stuff religiously and the scouts and whatnot, they think that this is a very deep draft. They think that there is a lot of talent, maybe not household names yet, but to you, did this draft have like that wow factor that maybe we were accustomed to seeing back in the day? And the worst part about it is, Chris, is like during the draft, they're doing like these flashbacks in time. And then they went like during the draft, they went back and they showed you like the draft of 96, mm-hmm. you know, when Kobe was drafted, when Allen Iverson, Ray Allen, Marbury, Steve Nash, like all in that draft. And you're like, you can't do that, you know, because then you immediately try to compare it to the thing we had last night and those players and whatnot. It's not fair to these guys. You know, everything's going to pale in comparison to that.
Yeah, I mean, the expectations go through the roof. I mean, I was doing Get Up yesterday and Jay Billis was on, and he was talking about how this draft's depth rivals what we saw in draft with LeBron and Carmelo and Dwayne Wade,
right?
he was talking about that draft, and I was just like, that's, I mean, to compare these kids to those guys, I mean, you're talking about arguably the greatest player of all time in LeBron James, or if he's not the greatest, he's second greatest player of all time. And then you look at Dwayne Wade, you know, champion, and then you look at Carmelo Anthony. I mean, he's one of the top 15 scorers that the game has ever seen. So I mean, it's a lot to try to compare this class to what those guys have done. But I mean, a lot of people believe in the depth of this class, and one of the things that we've come to learn about Leon Rose is that he's gonna be, you know, finding those diamonds in the rough. He's one of those guys that's not gonna leave any stone unturned. And you heard the early reports about the Knicks trying to move up in the draft yesterday, trying to package 19 and 21 to get up to maybe get Chris Duarte or Davion Mitchell. That didn't materialize. So they ended up falling back, picking up an extra first round draft pick in the future, and then getting a 3-and-D guy in Quentin Grimes. So I don't mind what the Knicks did at all. I know I'm not a Knicks fan, so I'm not as invested. But I thought yesterday was a really smart plan. Like, if we can't get up to get our guys, then we're going to package these picks. We're going to fall back a little bit, pick up future assets, and then get a guy that we think can come in and contribute now in a 3-and-D role. So it just makes sense to me.
I got to tell you, it was a little painful, though, watching that last night. And then watching the Knicks finally make that first selection and it being Quentin Grimes. Because, you know, I'm a Rutgers guy.
Oh.
And Quentin Grimes, you know, it's like reopening the wound all over again. From back in March, Quentin Grimes, Houston Cougars. I mean, we had that game in the second. I mean, we had the game. Had it. Like,
until we didn't.
And Quentin Grimes was one of the reasons, of course. But, you know, the thing you say real quick, and as I said, we'll talk about this in depth a little bit later, but for Knicks fans that didn't really get a chance to watch much of, you know, Houston and Quentin Grimes and whatnot, all you need to know about the way Houston played basketball under Kelvin Sampson, they were defense, they were rebounding. They weren't going to go out there and put 100 up on the scoreboard and shoot lights out from three. They kind of played, an all-out, dirty, grinded-out game of basketball, and it was effective. It was almost like the college equivalent to, like, the 90s Riley Knicks, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Attacked the heck out of the glass. Quentin Grimes is a guy who, you know, was a Kansas transfer, didn't really work out for him there, and he kind of reinvigorated himself in Houston under Kelvin Sampson. So if that's the type of player you're bringing into this city, into this team, under this coach in Thibodeau, Knicks fans have a chance to be pretty pleased with Quentin Grimes down the road.
Oh, no question about it. And you know any guy that Tibbs and Leon Rose brings in is going to have some commitment to defense. Like, they've made that a staple. They've made that their calling card. Now, we all know that they need to get more dynamic on offense, especially with the guys in the backcourt. But, I mean, they're going to play really, really good defense, and Quentin Grimes is supposed to be, you know, one of the better defenders that's in this draft. So we'll see if he's able to come in and contribute early. But, I mean, that is the expectation around the NBA circles, is that this is a guy that can come in and immediately fill a role for the New York Knicks. So, I mean, as a Knicks fan, I know it's not a name that you know, but, I mean, you got to get excited about the approach because it seems to make sense. Like, if your guy is not there, let's not reach for people. Let's make sure that we get good value. And oh, by the way, we've got future assets that we can use in order to package, in order to make a deal, if one of the guys that we feel like can help our team take a jump becomes available.
No doubt about it. And you know, you said two guys like that you take, whether it's in the second round, late in the first round. Let's not forget, a year ago, didn't the Knicks end up with a pretty good player at number 25, less?
Manuel Quickly.
He turned out to be okay. And you know, like, it's no different than in football, right? Because, like, football guys, when you have the NFL draft, scouts, GMs, personnel folks, they love to get their hands dirty. Like, to them, anybody could go out there and make, you know, a top 10 pick, and a guy who's, like, super talented, and a guy who's through the roof and everybody adores. But the true, like, guys who eat this up, they find the value in the mid rounds, the late rounds. That's where they love making picks and finding prospects. So if you're Leon Rose, and if you're, you know, Worldwide West and his staff, these guys that the Knicks got from 25 and then on down those picks into the second round, including an international player who, God bless you if you can pronounce his name. I'm not going to be able to do that right now. Maybe by the end of the show I could. The Lithuanian point guard. But he's going to be a draft and stash guy. You know, he's going to need time to develop, and they're going to have him overseas doing that stuff. But this is where you find the value and the challenge. And, boy, if I could find a diamond in the rough or two, let's say, in the second round of the draft, that just means you're doing your job, and it validates it.
No, you're absolutely right. And this was one of the things that we talked about last year when the Knicks were putting together this staff, when Leon Rose was going about the business of finding people that would help him unearth some of these diamonds in the rough. I mean, he went out and got Walt Perrin from the Utah Jazz, and then Frank Zanin from OKC, and then Brock Aller from Cleveland, the cap guy. Like, he built a really good front office and set themselves up to be able to have this type of success, to be able to find these guys that would be able to fit what they were trying to build with Tibbs as the head coach. And so it just feels like they're a functional organization, and even though they haven't made a really splashy move yet, it feels like it's a bunch of solid moves, a bunch of base hits. No, you know, with the trade deadline, baseball's on my mind. But it seems like it's a bunch of base hits, and if you add that up, it's going to lead to really good things for the Knicks for years to come. It feels like they're on track to have a sustainable program. And that's what you want as a Knicks fan coming out of the last decade and a half of Knicks basketball.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, on a macro level, though, looking at next year, just in the short term, Eastern Conference, this is the first chance you and I have had a chance to do a show in a while, right? But I've been saying that, yeah, this past year was great, and we all got a kick out of the Knicks this year. We got a lot of enjoyment. It was cool. But you can't expect, as a fan, realistically, to just bring the same group out onto the court again next season in October when the year starts and expect to be top four again in the Eastern Conference. It's not going to work that way. So they've got some work to do. Now, I don't think it's wise to sell out and go all in and make some ill-fated move to, let's say, take on bad contracts or whatever it is that might make you a better team for the next 1 or 2 years. I agree with what you said. I think it's more about big picture-wise. But when you also analyze the big picture, I think that you might have to take a step back or two, because next year is going to be a normal 82-game season. Mm-hmm. You know, we would like to think that some of the teams that, you know, had some missteps this year and dealt with injuries and whatnot, maybe things are a little bit more stable for them next season. The East is going to be loaded this year from top to bottom. I mean, I think the East is deep, so it's going to be a, not to say the Knicks can't make the playoffs, but it's going to be a challenge for them to be a top four team again in that East the way it stacks up.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think Philadelphia is not going away. I mean, they're probably going to try to move Ben Simmons, but whatever they bring back is still going to help them compete at a championship level. The Brooklyn Nets will be back, and we'll see what happens with their health, but they'll all be back, the big three with them. And then the Bucks are the champions. The Atlanta Hawks were a team that surprised a lot of folks once they got to the postseason. The Miami Heat will be back. The Boston Celtics, they're not going away with Tatum and Jaylen Brown being healthy. So, I mean, you're right. There's a lot of depth in the Eastern Conference, and it's going to be a lot harder for the Knicks to maintain their standing and be one of those teams that's in the top four, top five when it comes to seeding in the postseason. So I absolutely feel like there are some moves that could be available for the Knicks this offseason. We'll see how the summer progresses. But, I mean, I liked what they did last night just because it showed that they're not desperate. They're not going to go out there and just pick guys just to pick guys. They want to make sure that they find value, and they want to find guys that are a scheme and culture fit for their program. And that kind of discipline eventually will yield you the type of results that you're looking for.
No doubt about it. Even a team like Indiana, you know, they got a nice little core foundation. And, oh, by the way, now they got themselves a championship coach again in Rick Carlisle.
How about
you
that?
Know? So when Indiana's going to be a better team. The East is deep. I'm telling you, it's deep. And, dude, these rosters, it's only beginning now to take shape for all these teams, right? I mean, wait till we get into the free agency and the trades and all that stuff. So you never know how it's going to look, but it's going to be tougher for the Knicks next season. That's all I'm saying.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what's amazing, Chris? Like, in hindsight, so the Yankees go out there. A couple of nights ago, they bring in Joey Gallo from the Texas Rangers. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, they doubled down on the left-handed bat, and you get Anthony Rizzo from the Chicago Cubs. And lost in all of that, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, wait a second. Did the Yankees not lose 14-0 earlier in the day? Because, like, you talk about burying the lead or whatnot.
Yeah.
It is now forgotten that the Yankees not only played a game, but probably gave one of their worst performances of the season. And, oh, by the way, your high-priced pitcher got absolutely shelled in Gerrit Cole, but now it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Everybody's paying attention to what's going on off the field. But yesterday in that matinee, that was pretty bad, Dan. I mean, Gerrit Cole was a gas can, and you knew that it wasn't going to be the best start that he had after. I mean, Brandon Lau, that one, it sure looked like a home run. I'm glad they called it foul, but he ends up getting an infield base hit, and then he walks G-Man Choi, and then Austin Meadows takes him deep. And from that moment, you just felt like, yeah, this is not going to be our day. Now, he ends up righting the ship a little bit. I think he had a stretch in there where he retired 16 or 17 batters. But by the time he got rolling, I mean, the game was pretty much decided. Like, you know, when the Yankees are down 4-0 after the first inning, like, it's just, this is one of those where you don't think the offense is going to be able to climb out of that hole. And that certainly was the case. The offense didn't do anything yesterday. So a little bit disappointing because you had an opportunity to go for a series sweep to try to gain a lot of ground against the Tampa Bay Rays and in the wild card standings. And it just felt like that was another opportunity with Gerrit Cole on the mound that you let get away. And the Yankees, at this point in the season, they got to stop blowing Gerrit Cole starts. Like, this is becoming a disturbing trend. Like, they're 10-11 on the season with Gerrit Cole starting. Like, that's a problem. And in the last six, they're 2-4. Now, Gerrit Cole hadn't been good. I mean, he's got a 5.35 ERA over that span. But at the same time, you look at the Yankees' offense, they scored a total of 13 runs over those six games. So, I mean, I get that Gerrit Cole is a bad dude and you paid him $300 million for a reason. But your offense also has to come to the party. And they haven't been contributing enough. So, this is one of those things, like, you're worried about, you know, this continuing to be the case because, I mean, no matter what moves you make, if Gerrit Cole isn't right, if the Yankees aren't winning games when he's on the mound, then the Yankees aren't going to go far. Like, I mean, even if you do somehow wrangle one of those wild cards, I mean, if you're not winning Gerrit Cole starts, the Yankees are not going on any kind of postseason run.
Well, and it's a good point you make because think about it. In all probability, I mean, unless a miracle happens, if the Yankees make the postseason, it's going to be via the wild card, right? Which means what? One game for your life, nine innings for your life. That's probably going to be a Gerrit Cole start. Now, if Aaron Boone can reconfigure the rotation to make sure that Cole would pitch that game, right? I mean, they might need Gerrit Cole to pitch like game 161 or game 162 mm-hmm. just to be able to live another day. But in a perfect world, that would be a Gerrit Cole start. You're right about that. Let's hear from the Yankee ace, though. He takes the blame for the Bombers being unable to sweep yesterday.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard when your starter puts you down 4-0 in the first to really kind of muster something up against a team of this quality. So in terms of sweeps in general, I think it's hard to sweep. I think we've had some opportunities to sweep and maybe not had some stuff go our way. But in respect to this series, this one's on me.
If you look big picture, okay, and look, they did take 2 out of 3. The goal is to win series regardless, no matter when it is. If you win series all season long, you're going to have a pretty, pretty awesome record at the end of the season. When we went into the All-Star break with this team, we identified 10 games out of the break, right? 11 games out of the break.
Mm-hmm.
10 games. The 7 against the Boston Red Sox and the 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays. Mm-hmm. They went 5-5 in
those.
No,
you're
10.
Right. You're right. You're right. It was 11 games. They had the rain out. Yeah.
Right.
Or the game that was postponed for COVID. Excuse me.
That's right. Yeah. So 5-5 in the 10 games they ended up playing. Is that good enough? Is that satisfactory? I mean, they didn't necessarily, make any waves or they didn't like close the gap in any way. But 5-5, it's kind of neutral. It's standing pat. But is that satisfactory enough given they struggled like hell against Boston all season long? Tampa Bay, we know, was really, really good. Yeah. The fact that they didn't bury themselves even further, do you settle for 5-5?
Listen, it doesn't feel good, but at this point, knowing that Brian Cashman was going to make some moves at the trade deadline, you just hope that you can hang on until those reinforcements come. And then if you look at the first couple of weeks of the second half and all of those guys that were out of the lineup because of COVID, like at this point, you'll take what the Yankees have done. I mean, they got the 2 games against the Phillies. They ended up getting the series against the Rays. I mean, we'll see what happens, when we get to the next couple of series. But I mean, listen, they're going into a stretch of their season. They've got 4 series against teams that they should be able to take care of their business against. I mean, they're going down to Miami. That's the final leg of the road trip that they're currently on right now. Then you've got the Baltimore Orioles. And you're talking about the Seattle Mariners, a team that you're looking up at in the wild card standings, and then the Kansas City Royals. So, I mean, those are 4 series that on paper the Yankees should win. So they have an opportunity to get on a little bit of a roll right here and continue to try to gain some ground. Now, we'll see if they can go out there and actually do it. But, I guess my point is this is an opportunity right now in the second half. Now that you've got guys back in the lineup, now that Brian Cashman has made some moves to bring in some reinforcements, this is when you got to start making your push. And so hopefully that's what we start to see. Hopefully Rizzo and Joey Gallo and whatever else Brian Cashman brings over before 4 p.m. today ends up being the bolt that this team needs, the energy, the shot in the arm that this team needs in order to, continue to try to build some momentum and get on them a little bit of a run. Because they've got to make up some ground. They absolutely have to. Because right now, the Boston Red Sox, they have a stranglehold on the division. You're not catching them. The Tampa Bay Rays, even though you just won that series, they're still up several games on you in the standings. So, I mean, it's starting to get to that point in the season where it's going to be now or never in terms of the Yankees decide that they're going to make a move.
Here's what did happen, though, in the last couple of days. Okay, and you mentioned Seattle, and they're coming into the Bronx next weekend for 4, which is going to be a big series, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry DePoto, who's the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, the dude throughout his career, he is a big fan of trades. He's like Trader Jerry. The guy can't contain himself when it comes to making trades. He loves making trades. On Tuesday he made a trade, and he sent Kendall Graveman, who was their closer, across the hallway, basically, to the Houston Astros, who they were playing. So he just literally walked into the other dugout and into the other clubhouse. That trade gutted that Seattle Mariners clubhouse. It gutted it because they didn't understand the logic at all. Mm-hmm. They had just had a dramatic victory on Monday night where they came back from 7-0 down against the Astros and won a thriller with a late inning grand slam. Then they find out Graveman's traded the next day. There was a great story in the Seattle Times, Ryan Divish, about how you had guys who were like in tears in that clubhouse, feeling that the management pulled the plug on them. They didn't believe in them. Like, why would you send Kendall Graveman away? And how have they responded since that trade, Chris? They went out and lost the next 2 games. So you wonder now, where is the psyche of this Mariners team? And if this is going to have an impact on them moving forward to where their season goes off the rails a little bit. And if it does, that's an opportunity for the Yankees to pounce.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, you're hoping that those teams kind of fall off or fall by the wayside so you can continue to, you know, make up ground in the wild card standings and hopefully get a hold of one of those. But, I mean, you know, Seattle was a team that you were watching. The Oakland A's were a team that you were watching, and they've been making some moves at, before the deadline. I think Starling, they brought over Starling Marte, yeah, the outfielder. So, I mean, I just those are the teams that the Tampa Bay Rays, another one. Like, those are the teams that you're now fighting against in order to, you know, hold on to your standing. And you can't forget about the Toronto Blue Jays, who are right behind you. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting, this race for those wild card spots as we get further into the second half. I mean, we're past the 100 game mark, so we're into that final third of the season for the Yankees, and it's just, this is the time where they've got to make their move, they've got to make their push, and I credit Brian Cashman with having some urgency and going out there and bringing over some big lefty bats, and we'll see what he does in terms of addressing the pitching staff and some other little tweaks to the roster. But I mean, this is the time that the Yankees got to get something done. This is put up or shut up, and we'll see what happens over the course of the next couple of weeks. I mean, like I said, they've got four series that are all winnable, you know, so mm-hmm. this is an opportunity for you to continue to stack series wins. And if you do that, eventually you're going to look up and you're going to like where the Yankees are standing. So this is the time right now for the Yankees to get it done. I don't want to hear about any more excuses. I just want to see wins.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
So Gallo a couple of days ago, Anthony Rizzo yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You can't complain about it. If you're a Yankee fan, you can't complain about it. Like, what they brought was an area of need, obviously from the left side of the plate. You're getting two guys who have, for that ballpark, power that can go off at any moment. Certainly Gallo more of a true power hitter than, let's say, Rizzo is. But Rizzo's got some pop when he wants to. But in the case of Anthony Rizzo, here's what you're getting at first base. You're getting a Gold Glove caliber defender, which is important. You're getting a guy who's not going to strike out a lot. He's going to put the bat on the ball. And as I said, he's got, I don't even think you could call it sneaky pop, but he could get a hold of one, and he's a legitimate home run hitting force, I think, when he needs to be. But the bottom line is that he's a good hitter, and he's a super dude. You know, you're bringing in two really, really good clubhouse guys as well into this organization. We know that Gallo's got another year of control, so he'll be around next season. You alluded to it a little while ago, Chris. You like these moves. It's a step in the right direction. It may or may not be enough to get them into the postseason. But if the Yankees do want to give themselves the best chance to get into October this year, they can't stop now because, in my opinion, the greatest area of need has still not been addressed, and that's the starting pitching.
Yeah, starting pitching hasn't been addressed, but you got to think that Corey Kluber and Luis Severino coming back is, you know, as Brian Cashman sees it, doesn't necessarily have the most urgency about addressing that aspect of his team. Like, you don't know what those guys are going to be once they get back, but, I mean, the hope is that they will come and they will fortify the pitching staff along with Garrett Cole and Jordan Montgomery.
Big if.
And Jameson Taillon, who's been terrific, by the way, in his last five or six starts. So I understand that's a big if, but, I mean, when you look at it from Brian Cashman's perspective, I mean, the starting pitching was never going to be the strength of this team. The strength of this team is supposed to be the bullpen, and it's supposed to be your hitting. I think he's addressed the hitting, but he's going to have to address that bullpen as well because that group has been taxed for the first 4 months of this season. Like that group has been overworked, and you've had to lean on them a little more than you expected to. And so I think they've got to add another arm to that bullpen. I know they added Clay Holmes earlier this week, but I feel like there's more work to be done in that area, and maybe that's what he's saving Luke Voit trade chip for, to be able to bring something back to fortify that aspect of the pitching staff. But, I mean, as far as Rizzo and Gallo go, I mean, listen, we've been complaining about this Yankees team for years now in terms of how they play defensively. And so I think bringing over those two guys plus defenders, but not only that, those two guys being able to give you production from their respective positions beyond what the Yankees have received this year. I mean, left field has – the production hasn't been there. It hadn't been what you would expect from left field for a major league club. First base, the production hasn't been there. So being able to bring in Rizzo and Joey Gallo, you're going to get that offensive production from those spots, and you're upgrading defensively at those spots. So those will have to be viewed as wins. Like those, I don't see the downside or the negative from the Gallo trade or from the Rizzo trade.
Now, here's what the problem you still have left over, though, defensively with the infield. Remember, because Trevor Story was the hot name for a while,
yep.
right? About, like, go get Trevor Story, and then you could at least kick Gleyber off a shortstop, which is not his best position. Everybody moves mm-hmm. over one to the right, right?
Yep.
You go Gleyber second, you could kick DJ over to first base.
Yep.
So you're still left with Gleyber at shortstop, but that's something you're going to have to live with. And I never thought that the Story thing was a viable option because, remember, that whole thing, if it was going to work itself out, the caveat to it was that, okay, yeah, we'll find a way to make all of these pieces fit, but it also means that Giancarlo Stanton's going to have to grab a glove and go play left field.
Yeah.
And CC, look, this is like one of the laughable mysteries of the universe right now to me, that like Giancarlo Stanton somehow, some way, with all the money he's getting paid, he still can't play the field. and that they're so afraid to put him out there because if he plays like three innings, he's going to either, you know, have an oblique, have a quad, and then disappear again for 2 months on the IL. But
yeah.
I'm so sick and tired of hearing. Remember, he was supposed to play the field in Fenway Park. That didn't happen. No, you know, he's going to go play it in Tampa. That didn't happen. Now they're targeting Marlins Park. And oh, by the way, I'd be shocked if it happens this weekend because Marlins Park is one of the most cavernous outfields in the mm-hmm. entire sport, and this guy who hasn't played the field in 2 years, you're going to stick him out there for his, hey, welcome back to left field moment? I can't see it happening either, but it's comical to me that this guy, he can't play the field, and that this is something that they may have been counting on happening if they were going to bring in Story. Like, you can't put that much stock into that because the guy is what he is. He's a DH. It's a horrible contract. And in my opinion, that's when this whole Yankee thing kind of started to go sideways, when they brought Stanton onto a team that didn't really need him to begin with.
No, it's not just your opinion, though. I mean, it's Rick and Dave's as well. Like, they hated the Stanton trade when it happened in real time because you already had a guy like that in Aaron Judge, and you clog up your DH position. Now you can't give guys that you would like to give a day off in the field the opportunity to do so while keeping their bat in the lineup. So, I mean, you know, this is one of those things that is what it is at this point, and Brian Cashman is going to have to navigate around it. So while I'll give him credit for what he's done the last couple of days in terms of being able to add position players, I mean, a lot of the problems that this Yankees team is facing this season, especially in the first half, they were his doing. Like, this is his team. Like, roster construction flaws are on him, not on Aaron Boone, not on anybody else. And so, I mean, he's trying to find a way to be able to navigate it and being able to add to this team. And we'll see what that yields moving forward. But, I mean, the one thing I will say is, you know, this is Brian Cashman's problem to fix. And it seems like he's making strides in terms of being able to do that. Because I can't find anybody that's down on the Yankees making this move. And the fact that he's making it fit under the luxury tax threshold, it's, you know, he's doing some wheeling and dealing. It's impressive to watch.
No, you're right about that. And, you know, the Cubs, believe it or not, are picking up the remainder of his contract for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Now, you had to give up the number 9 and the number 12 prospect in your system in order to make that move. But, I mean, the Yankees are all in on this season. I mean, they have to be when you look at their payroll. They have a top 3 payroll in baseball. So, I mean, you knew that Brian Cashman wasn't going to punt on the season. He had to make some kind of moves, and he's being really aggressive right up at to the trade deadline, and you'd know that there's probably another move or two in there today. So, I mean, if you're a Yankees fan, it's exciting because now it feels like the general manager and the organization are having the type of urgency that we've had after watching the first half of the season, thinking to ourselves, okay, something's got to happen to kind of get this team back on track and get them to the point where we feel like they can compete at a really high level and make the playoffs.
I don't know how you feel about it. I don't even care. Like you mentioned, you know, what they had to surrender here, right? Alexander Vizcaino, who's their 9th-ranked prospect. Okay, great. 9th-ranked prospect according to who? According to the scouting services? It doesn't mean they're right. You know, what if he's not their 9th-ranked prospect according to, let's say, the Chicago Cubs? What if they scouted him a little bit higher and they have more value on the player? Or lower, higher, lower, it doesn't matter. And I always say, you know, give me, when we're talking about prospects, it's the great unknown, it's potential. Give me proven over potential any day of the week. And as you said, this is a Yankee team that's built to win now, right? You're paying all this money to Gerrit Cole. You want to be able to maximize on his peak seasons, if you will. I think it's a no-brainer. I really and truly think it's a no-brainer to go ahead and swing the deal for Rizzo in this case. Even if he's not quite at the level he was, let's say, when the Cubs were champions in 2016, the guy's still really good, and he's an upgrade based on what they had previously. I think it's a good – I really – look, it's been easy to take shots at Cashman and easy to take shots at the Yankees all season long. Mm-hmm. But the last couple of days, CeCe, I'm telling you, like, it's really hard to find fault with these two moves that they've made. It really is.
No, you can't. And here's the thing. We're talking about Rizzo defensively or what he brings to the table, what he brings to the order. I mean, one of the biggest contributions that he's probably going to make is going to be in that clubhouse. Being able to provide some leadership and then that experience and being able to win a championship. Like, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of guys that have championship pedigree in that Yankees clubhouse right now. So being able to have somebody that's been there, done that, got the T-shirt and the ring, I think that adds a tremendous amount of value. Like, a big part of it is having the blueprint and understand what it takes, the things that you have to do in order to compete once we get to that point in the season. I remember when I was with the Giants in 2011, that season we lost four straight games. Four straight, Dan. I mean, when you lose four straight games in the NFL, they're talking about, you know, firing coaches, the coaches polishing up
their
resumes.
Quarter of the season.
And guys are shipping their cars back home. Like, that's what happens. But because we had guys that were still on that team that were a part of what they did in 2007 and winning Super Bowl 42, like, we kind of had a roadmap of sorts on how to get back on track and how to compete at a really high level. And then adding Anthony Rizzo brings that to the Yankees. Somebody that understands that knows what it's like to go through the adversity of a season and still be able to fight, claw, and scratch, and find a way to be able to win, especially once we get to October. Like, the Yankees need somebody that has that level of grit and that level of leadership. And I just feel like Anthony Rizzo brings both of those to that clubhouse in spades. So that's the part of the move that I don't think anybody's talking about, but it actually excites me the most because they need that on this team.
Rizzo, they were able to catch up with him, with the good folks at NBC Sports Chicago. And you think about, you know, this is a guy who was a Chicago Cub, helped reverse the curse, right? Helped bring the Chicago Cubs that World Series title, which had been, you know, a century in the making. So the guy knows how to deal with pressure and to overcome that from a team standpoint. And there's going to be, you know, you're thrust right into the pressure cooker by coming into play into this city and into the Bronx. But Rizzo told NBC Sports Chicago going from one historic franchise to another is something that suits him.
Yeah. I mean, it's what it is. I mean, he's got a lot of family in the tri-state area. He talked about being able to come back over here and see how cool that would be, having the opportunity for things to set up to have a really good story. So, I mean, I mean, the fact that he's excited about it, I mean, that's exciting as a Yankees fan. Because, I mean, he's going to embrace the time that he's going to have here, and there's no telling what that could lead to. Because let's face it, this Yankees team is talented, and they've underachieved for the most part this season. You're just hoping that something can happen that can unlock this group's potential. And I feel like these latest two moves, you know, in conjunction with whatever else Brian Cashman does, hopefully that gives this team the key to be able to do that.
No doubt about it. Let's try it again here. The computer was malfunctioning a little bit. Let's hear from Rizzo talking about moving on to the Bronx Bombers.
I've just focused on going to be a Yankee now. And just another really cool opportunity to play for another historic franchise. Now, this will always be home for me, but like I said, my best friend in the game, John Lester, did the same thing. Has two special places in his heart. So, but for these next 3 months, it's going to be fun. You go right into a race, and seeing the Yankees pull the triggers like this, get Gallo, me now, obviously, but that's what they do, and they're excited.
And you know, think about it, Chris. You know, by 4 o'clock this afternoon, a couple of Anthony Rizzo's or one or more of his former teammates and, you know, maybe his longtime buddy there with the Cubs might be also coming to New York and playing for the team in Queens in Chris Bryant or Javi Baez.
Yeah,
you never know.
One of those guys.
Because, you know, the Cubs aren't done tearing this thing down, and you knew it wouldn't be. You know, on a bigger scale, though, it's funny to me. I was telling the guys, like, before we got on the air this morning, you think about what's happened here in the last couple of days in baseball. We've seen right before our very eyes two world championship teams in the last 5 years basically being broken up. The Chicago Cubs, right? And now the Washington Nationals, who have sold off key pieces, right, with the Trey Turner and the Max Scherzer deal to the Los Angeles Dodgers yesterday, which still boggles my mind that the Dodgers were able to get that done. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, two championship clubs that when you're going to look at them, let's say, by tonight, you're probably not even going to recognize them anymore.
No, fair point. I mean, do we lump the Boston Red Sox into that group as well? The 2018 champion?
That's my thing.
It's like they tore it down for a year and a half, and now they're back to competing for chips. Like, I don't know how quickly that's crazy how quickly they turned that thing back around. You wouldn't think after moving on from Mookie Betts and some of those guys that they had in the outfield, the Killer Bees, that they would be able to get back to where they're at right now. But, I mean, that's pretty impressive what they've done. But, yeah, I mean, that's what it is, though, Dan. I mean, you have to go all in to try to give yourself the best chance to compete while you have that championship window open, and those clubs went for it. I mean, kind of like what the Dodgers are doing right now. The Dodgers are going for it. Like, yep. If you're the Yankees, like, you're in that same boat. This is the time that you have to go for it. And I get that Brian Cashman doesn't want to sell out, doesn't want to mortgage the future. He doesn't want to compromise championships for one championship. But, I mean, at this point, Yankees fans will take that one championship. Let's just get it done. If this is the year that it needs to happen in, let's get it done. It certainly feels like they're running out of time with this core group of players. Like with the Aaron Judges and Gary Sanchez's of the world. Like, it just feels like this is the time that you need to get it done, because down the road, you're going to have to make a decision on whether or not you're going to pay those guys. And as frugal as they've been the last couple of years, like, you got to think that, you know, if they don't get it done the next couple of years, they're probably going to break up the band and try to reset this thing. So I just feel like this is the right time to go all in, to use the assets from the farm system, to bring over the pieces that you feel like you need in order to go on a postseason run.
And, you know, another guy, like we said, Cole's not getting any younger. He's not getting any younger. You want to maximize when he's still pitching at an elite level, or has the capability to pitch at an elite level, certainly for the money that you're paying him with $324 million. Let's go to the phones, Chris, 800-919-ESPN, 800-919-3776. Let's say hi to Spike in St. Pete. He's going to bat leadoff here on DCR. Spike, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Chris, great week. Dan, you're working with one of the nicest people on the planet.
Oh, we knew that already. Come on, Spike. We knew that.
Yeah. No, I know. Listen, there's no sports activity this week, huh? Quiet day last night.
pretty quiet week. Pretty quiet.
Yeah, listen, I think the Yankees yesterday took a juice cleanse and cleaned out everything, and now we're going for it, so it's a good sign. And since it's me, I hope you give me 30 seconds to talk about basketball. That draft last night, you have to understand what Leon Rose is all about. I've known him for 30-something years. He was a great agent at CAA, and this is all planned. This is a slow growth, and he wanted a 3-and-D guy, and Grimes is a 3-and-D guy. I don't think the draft after the first four or five picks is that stronger draft, meaning one great guy. I think you could have flipped the coin. I was surprised. I always forget the names. You could help me. The guy who made the game-winning shot, the half-court shot.
Jalen Suggs.
Yeah, I thought Suggs would go one or two because he doesn't have the raw talent, but he's got the leadership quality. But it always boils down to the talent. And the NBA said, you know, still in the spotlight, but I'm going to focus on the Yankees the next month or so. And they're here, and they're in town, you know, or they were in town. And listen, I can't figure yesterday's game. You just write it off?
Yeah, I think that's one of those that's easy to flush, Spike. I mean, you lost 14-0. Not a whole lot of takeaways as a player when you lose 14-0.
Yeah, as simple as that. And you know what? Look, you forget about it, right? You forget about it, especially when you look at the moves that you made, you know, sandwiched around that one defeat. That's the beauty of baseball, you know, those type of losses. And look, the Yankees have a PhD in gut-punching losses this season, right? I mean, they have as many of them as anybody. And the beauty of baseball is there's a game the next day. You have the opportunity to go out there and put it behind you if you can focus, and Yankees are going to be able to do that down there in Miami. Now, you know, the Marlins are a prideful group, but, you know, they've been sellers here already, giving up Marte, so at least on paper they're not as good. Yankees should be able to go down there and take care of business, you know, and win two out of three games. But it's not going to be easy. You know, you still have to go out there and play hard. I mean, the Marlins went out there and played good baseball against the San Diego Padres in their building just last weekend. So they're not going to hand the Yankees anything, but the opportunity is in front of them. Now, you know, when we come back here to start the next hour, we'll get into the Mets a little bit here. And I think it goes without saying, they've got a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Over the next, you know, however many hours it is till 4 o'clock. Because anybody in Metland who thinks that, oh, we just got to get a couple of guys healthy and, you know, throw the bats and throw the balls out on the field and we'll be fine, I think you're delusional. You're delusional. And I think that this series against the Atlanta Braves, and specifically the game yesterday, I think, had a lot of worrisome signs that don't point in a favorable direction for this team as we go into the final 2 months of the season as they're presently constituted.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It's DCR.
Rizzo serves the ball to center field. Dallow launches this ball deep to right field and gone.
Rizzo pummels one to right. It is gone.
So Gallo a couple of days ago, Anthony Rizzo yesterday.
Mm-hmm. You have to go all in to try to give yourself the best chance to compete while you have that championship window open. If you're the Yankees, you're in that same boat. This is the time that you have to go for it.
But if the Yankees do want to give themselves the best chance to get into October this year, they can't stop now.
This is DCR on 98.7 ESPN.
Hour three on a Friday morning, DCR. Dan Grasso, Chris Kenny hanging out with you here on 98.7 ESPN. And yeah, a little Buster time right now as we go out to the guest line. And DCR on 98.7 ESPN is presented by Progressive Insurance. Want to bring on our ESPN insider. It's Buster Olney with the trade deadline coming up at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Buster, Dan, and Chris, thanks for getting up early. How are you, my friend?
I am fired up. What a great trade deadline. All these big names moving all over the place. A lot of stuff still on the board. After yesterday, I just cannot believe the Red Sox didn't find a way to get Anthony Rizzo. There was no player who was a better fit for any team than Rizzo was for the Red Sox. And the idea that the Yankees swooped in and grabbed him, and not for their top prospect, it's a head-scratcher for me as to why the Red Sox didn't finish that deal.
Well, reportedly, they pivoted to Kyle Schwarber, a little bit different. And, of course, he's got to get healthy here, so at least that's a lefty bat if possible. But, Buster, I agree with you. I mean, think about it. Like, if the deadline had come and gone already and we were finished, I think that there was enough moves that were made, certainly, that would give us enough to chew on. But the fact that we have until 4 o'clock this afternoon with more head-scratchers probably still to come, it's going to be fantastic here. How about the Yankees? They bring in the two left-handed bats here, one in each of the last 2 days, in Gallo and Rizzo. How much of an upgrade do you think this is for their playoff chase this year?
Well, they certainly have checked a lot of boxes. Adding the left-handed hitters, adding the balance to their lineup, adding in Anthony Rizzo, someone who has experience in a big market playing in big games. I don't think there's any question they've upgraded their offense. And I got to tell you, too, I mean, not only the Yankees, but some of the other teams that have been making moves, you love the fact that people are trying to win. You know, the last 10 years, people in baseball have been really upset about the amount of tanking that's gone on. And in the Yankees' case, let's face it, their chances for winning the division are basically nil. Like, they probably are not going to catch the Red Sox. They know that in their front office. They're playing, they're upgrading their team for the opportunity to make one of the two wild cards and to play in a one-game winner-take-all elimination game. That's what they invested their resources in, and there probably would be, you know, to use the phrase by my late great friend Kevin Towers, you know, the propeller heads who would say that's bad math. Why would you do that? But I respect the fact that the Yankees are stepping up and saying, yeah, it's a small window, but with Gerrit Cole, with Giancarlo Stanton, you know, right in the peaks of their careers, we're paying them a lot of money, a lot already committed to this pot. We're going to do what we can to get better. And I wouldn't rule out the possibility they do more before we hit the deadline today.
Exactly, Buster. And I was going there because they bought over Anthony Rizzo. He's going to play first base. So, I mean, clearly that presents an opportunity for them to flip Luke Voit. What happens to him, and what are the potential trade targets for the Yankees before the deadline this afternoon?
I got to believe that their focus would be on pitching. And so maybe a parallel move with another team, for example, a reliever or some back-end starter, somebody like a number four, number five. And look, I think by the end of the day, you're going to see a ton of relievers move, for a lot of contenders. I wish, I had front burner specific names, but I think those are things that are going to develop as we go through the day. And, just teams decide, look, we're going to put this guy out there. We're going to put that guy out there. But I just based on my conversations last night with the Yankees people, they are grinding, and they're now that they're committed to trying to upgrade this group. I think they'll still be out there trying to do some things.
The luxury tax number is something that certainly the Yankees have been mindful of here for the last couple of seasons, and by unloading the relief pitchers to Cincinnati a couple of nights ago, that gave them a little bit more flexibility. And the fact that the Cubs are picking up the remainder of Rizzo's contract for the rest of the year gives them some more affordability here as 4 o'clock approaches. Do you expect them to still be straddling that line with the number buster, or can you see Hal Steinbrenner tell Brian Cashman, you know what, if there's a move that's substantially going to improve this club, shoot, we'll go right past that number if it means giving us a winner?
We have no indication that Hal Steinbrenner's given the okay to go over 210. And I think you framed it perfectly in terms of the deals they've made, how they made them, staying on the luxury tax threshold. They've made it this far, and we've only got a few hours to go. And I think that it's clear Hal is devoted to this. And if you want to step back and look at that from 30,000 feet. Think about this. The Yankees payroll this year will be about what the same as it was in 2004. And I'm sure they're going to be Yankee fans who are not happy about that. But it clearly was a something that was really important for Hal going into the year to duck back under the luxury tax threshold. And I know, Brian Cashman well enough to know that he believes that, look, if you put $210 million team together, or $206 million team together, you should be playing better than the way we played so far.
Buster, listen, I know there's a lot of news about the trade deadlines and potential targets, but I can't ignore what I saw yesterday from the Yankees getting drubbed by the Rays 14-0. Now, they did get the series win, but one of the disturbing trends that I've been seeing from this team is them losing Garrett Cole starts. I mean, in the last six starts from Garrett Cole, the Yankees are 2-4. They're 10-11 in Garrett Cole starts on the season, and Garrett Cole feels like he's trending in the wrong direction. Over the six-game span, he's got a 5.35 ERA. I know that they're making these moves to try to put themselves in position to contend for the postseason, but if Garrett Cole's not right, this team has no shot. So I got to ask you, what is the feeling around baseball about what's going on with Garrett Cole and why the Yankees can't win his starts?
And the fact is that, you'd be lying to say anything other. It's an open question, not only in the Yankees organization, but in other organizations, how steeply he's been affected by the sticky substance crackdown. Is he just a completely different pitcher without having the ability to have something to spin a baseball? I can't tell you exactly, what Garrett Cole was using before. I can't tell you, what pitches it affected specifically, but in terms of his pitch use, in terms of his performance, it's night and day from the before the crackdown and after, and that's just a fact. And you're right about the fact that he hasn't pitched well since the deadline or since that time. In this, when we look at the Yankees for this year, obviously Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, because they're in positions of making decisions, they're going to get a ton of scrutiny. Bottom line is that most of the Yankees players have not performed up to the back of their baseball cards. And Garrett Cole in the last 2 months is absolutely an example of that.
Talking baseball with Buster Olney here on ESPN, guest on DCR Pier via the Goodyear Hotline. Let's flip over to the Mets here, Buster. This series against the Atlanta Braves, again, look, they lose 3 out of 5. This Mets team, I think, is in first place more by default than anything else because the division is so bad here. And it's obvious that they can use some reinforcements when it comes to the starting pitching. Do you expect significant trade activity for the Mets by 4 o'clock this afternoon? Or is it going to be a small move here, a small move there? And are they just going to still insist on being too reliant on their injured players getting healthy as opposed to bringing in reinforcements from another club?
I think they're going to do something. I asked an executive this morning and with a text, hey, tell me by the end of the day, where does Craig Kimbrell land and where does Chris Bryant land? And his answer back was Kimbrell goes to the Giants and Bryant goes to the Mets. I think the fact that, we learned yesterday that the Mets had talked to other teams about J.D. Davis, made him available. I mean, that's one more clue into, how they're thinking about third base. And looking for alternatives. Chris Bryant, for months we've been talking about him as a possible connection with the Mets. And I think that absolutely stands. I think that, you know, they're one of two teams going into these last hours under the most pressure to do something. We got some insight from Steve Cohen with that tweet that he sent out, what was it, 10 days ago or so, when he posed, he was clearly trying to explain to the fan base what his thinking was, what the thinking of the front office was. Would you rather pay high prices now or wait till later when the prices get more realistic? I think that's what the Mets have been waiting for. I would say this. If we get through the trade deadline and the Mets don't do something significant, and then they somehow, you know, as the Braves get Travis d'Arnaud back and Waskar and Noah back, if the Phillies, you know, are the team that land Kimbrel today and the Mets lose the division, the fan base will go absolutely nuts. Absolutely crazy.
Buster, Javi Baez is another name that's kind of been linked to the Mets, and he came out earlier this week and said that, you know, Francisco Lindor being there was something that was attractive to him, and that he's the only guy that he would consider a position change and moving to second base for. Do you expect him to be in the mix in those conversations that the Mets are having with the Cubs or trade talks?
Yeah, and now what I heard around the edges about the Cubs is that Baez is the guy that they are most likely to keep among these core 2016 players. But, you know, as today evolves, let's say Chris Bryant winds up with the Giants instead of the Mets, and let's say the Mets, you know, suddenly become aggressive. Baez is a free agent in the fall. The Cubs want to keep him, want to sign him long-term. They could still do that, you know, trade him to the Mets and get him back. I thought all along that Baez potentially would be a fit for the Mets, and because of his positional flexibility, you let him fill in at short while Lindor's out. You move him to another spot. And the fact is that, you know, after Bryant got off to that amazing start first 6 weeks, Javi Baez has outplayed him. Like, he's been really good. He's been hitting with power. He's obviously a big swing and miss guy, but there are a lot of things that he brings to the table. And I think he is such a big stage type player. I think he would love to play with the Mets and love to play right alongside Lindor.
Let's just say real quick, for argument's sake, Buster, you mentioned Bryant, and you're right. First couple of months, he was great. He was almost like playing at his old MVP level, and he's gone south since. How much of it, though, do you think it's a case of Bryant maybe pressing a little bit, gripping the bat a little tight? Because he's had to deal with the trade questions probably for, you know, since day one. And as he got closer and closer to July and the deadline, you know, he's had to hear these even louder. Of course, that's all they asked him at the All-Star game there. How much do you think Bryant, though, could just benefit from a change of scenery, knowing where he's going to land? And then it relaxes him and frees up his mind a little bit to where he can go out there and play like the guy that we saw the first couple of months of the season.
There's no doubt about it. I think that Bryant and Rizzo are two great candidates for change of scenery, because I think it had gotten to the point, and Bryant actually gave voice to this in an interview he did during the wintertime, where he talked about how it wasn't as much fun. I think, you know, when we look at the 2016 Cubs, they win the World Series, and there was expectations it was going to be a dynasty, and that never took shape. And I think it was because it became hard to be those guys, right? You're playing amid expectation. You know, the fans, you know, are hungry for another title after you win one. You know, trade rumors, because Bryant didn't sign a long-term deal, started, you know, within 2 years after they won the World Series. And it got very businesslike. I think for Rizzo, who had contract talks that were far apart in spring, that fell apart, and you get the sense that there were some, you know, not great feelings between he and the team as he's leaving, I think these guys are going to absolutely love going to a different place where there's a different type of expectation. And maybe, you know, there'll be a sort of a rebirth of that fun that Brian referred to.
Buster, last night the Dodgers make a huge splash. I mean, they're trading with the Nationals. They bring over Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. It feels like Corey Seager is going to get squeezed out. What ultimately happens to him? Where do you think he ends up?
I think this is the Dodgers building a safety net in case Seager leaves, because he's represented by Scott Boras. He's a free agent in the fall, and we know with Boras clients, they almost always go to the team that bids the most. And the Dodgers, as they move forward, have to decide how they're going to spend their money. And so by signing Trey Turner now, it sets them up where no matter what happens with Corey Seager, they've got a shortstop for 2022. I think in the short term, in terms of losing playing time, I think a really interesting case could be in that of Cody Bellinger. you know, people, you know, I've seen people say that, you know, the Dodgers go from being, you know, favorites to win the World Series to being prohibitive favorites because of this deal. I actually think this deal addresses real needs in this moment. Mookie Betts has not been the same player that he was last year. He's had all these nagging injuries. He's on the injured list right now. And Cody Bellinger has absolutely fallen off the face of the earth as an offensive player. We saw that regression last year. Guys, he's hitting like in the 160s.
Mm-hmm.
Like he is not close to being what he was when he was an offensive player. So, Chris, maybe the guy who winds up getting squeezed out in Dave Roberts' day-to-day lineup decisions could be Cody Bellinger.
Wow.
Absolutely right. And I mean, forget about that throw he made the other night, which cost them the game in San Francisco. I mean, thank God there was netting, Buster. That would have taken somebody out in the upper deck with that throw that he made to third base there. I mean, my goodness. Buckle up, though. It should be fun over the next several hours. Thanks for a couple of minutes, Buster. Appreciate it. Enjoy the madness here today.
Thanks, guys. It'll be fun.
All right. There's Buster Olney of ESPN talking about the trade deadline. Chris, did you see that throw the other night with Bellinger on, what was it, Monday night, I think it was, in San Francisco against the Giants when he was playing first base and he tried to throw across the diamond to third to get the runner, and he just... When I tell you he airmailed the throw, he didn't do that. Doesn't do it justice. Like it would might have taken out somebody in the upper deck if there was no netting. I mean, what the hell was he doing? But it allowed the go ahead and eventual winning run to score.
I tell you what, the Giants are a huge surprise. Nobody saw that team coming. Saw that team coming this year. I mean, the Dodgers and the Padres, we expected them to be where they're at, but I mean, my goodness, what they're doing out in San Francisco?
Legit. They're legit, and it's no longer it's early. Let's see what they do. They're legit. They're going to the playoffs. The question is it going to be as the division champ or is it going to be as a wild card? There's no doubt about that one.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.